session number 22659, Reel 12.
Did you feel as though you were part of just a mopping up exercise?
Oh, well, yes, to some extent. We knew that there wasn't a resistance there, but at the same time, we had casualties.
People say that the islands could have just been isolated and the Japanese could have just been left alone. Did you feel that as an option at the time?
No, because if it was a...
Were you mentioning that there were casualties?
Yes, there were 13. There were casualties at on Balikpapan, which was where we were. And to my knowledge, there were two officers and... and a dozen other ranks, and that was killed and wounded. There was something like 35 to 40 wounded. So I was still active.
What do you recall then of the situation in relation to the dropping of the atomic bomb on the 6th of August 1945? Do you remember that occasion, Hiroshima?
Yes, I remember it. We, were very happy. We heard about it, and we're very happy, and we were just waiting then for what might be the much more acceptable decision, which turned out the cessation of hostilities. Now, that was the 6th
of... The 6th of August was Hiroshima, the 9th of August was Nagasaki, and in between, the Russians declared war on Japan.
Yeah.
What were the feelings, given your knowledge of bombs and what they could do, when you heard about this atomic bomb and what it had actually done?
Well, we were very pleased, and we realised that the Japs had asked for it over the years, and they finally caught up with them. And,
how did it feel to know that you had the atomic bomb up your sleeve?
Well, we didn't. The Yanks did.
Well, your side.
Well, we were just waiting to see what happened. And, what was going to be the final result. Which, of course, was a cessation of hostilities.
Where were you when you heard of the cessation of hostilities? Do you remember the occasion, the 15th of August, Japan surrenders?
Oh. Now, well, just above Balikpapan I was.
Do you remember the occasion?
Or just about.
Tell us about that.
Oh, well. It was, yes, we did it, but the shock was so great, I know, in my regard, that and surprising, that I probably suffered as much as a lot of other people, you know, with the shock. What might be the next step?
What do you mean by shock? What sort of shock?
Well,
how did it affect you?
What happens next?
What did it mean to you to know that the war was over after all this time?
Oh, you didn't know that it was over. It was a cessation of hostilities, you see. And we were hoping there'd be more definite information. And it was
VJ or VP Day, August the 15th.
Yeah.
Victory over Japan. Victory in the Pacific.
Yeah.
What were your feelings about the fact that there was victory in the Pacific and you were on the victorious side?
Oh, I was a happy man. But we wondered what was going to happen next.
Were there any celebrations or anything at all?
Yes and no.
What do you mean by that?
No, I won't repeat it.
Why not?
They were just joyful. There were, mind you, there were no... I don't think there were... Well, there was some alcohol around, but a very limited quantity. And, of course, I don't think it was with the troops. Only in the officer's mess there was a little bit. And I remember now I had some fellows from the Air Force come out and see us. And they come out, one of them was a brother-in-law of one of our officers. And and they took him, and the brother-in-law took him into the mess. And I think it was about 10 o'clock at night, and I was still having a grog, not a heavy grog, but just because there wasn't that much there, you see. And the acting CO came in. Oh, I went in there with them because there was no other officer went with them, you see. And with this chap, and I thought, well, I've got to give them some hospitality. And I went in with this, with our officer, and we were just having a quiet talk and a drink there. And the senior officer, he spoke to me. He came over from his tent and spoke to me something about going to bed. And I told him, I think I told him to go to buggery or something. He says, you. And I was threatened that you say that again, and I'll bloody well thrash you or something. You think, oh, he was a big bugger. And I said, you touch me, I said, I'll have you bloody well court-martialed. So there was silence. Yeah, but you don't want to report that. Yeah. No, but then instruction. I remember now. The instructions came out when were given notice of hostilities ceasing about the people returning to Australia, and there was a one issued that. Those people with 5 years service and 2 years overseas would have priority to go home. Well, just for your information, myself, I didn't realise that I was qualified for it. I'd had 5 years and 2 years overseas, and as it happened before, and I said, well, I'm right. And they said, oh, no. You're from the regular army, and you can't go. Which I found out later was all wrong. All I wanted was me there. So, I didn't know at the time, because somehow they'd kept it from me. And of course, I couldn't make it out, because there were other officers there, of course, a junior to me, who were, or they joined the regular army after war broke out, and then they came home. But oh no, I had to stay, so.
Were you involved with rounding up Japanese after the surrender at all?
Running them up?
Rounding them up.
Not definitely that I remember. There were just an odd one or two that they found as strays in the bush. And
what was the general attitude towards the Japanese after the surrender? The general attitude of the soldiers towards the Japanese.
Oh.
After the surrender.
Still unfriendly. As far as I was concerned, I always was.
Had you heard of the Sandakan Death March at all?
Yeah.
What had you heard about that?
All I've heard about it is what's been printed in books.
At the time, did you know about it at all?
Oh, no, God. There's more things than that. Communications, you see. They don't circulate those things. And, of course, it didn't affect us. No. Anyway, it might have been mentioned, but I can't recall. Not till probably some weeks later that I would have heard about it.
How did it feel to know that some of your men were going home before you?
Didn't worry me much. I was a bit annoyed, but it's the job. Matter of fact, one fella came to me and says, "Hey, boss." I said, "Yes." He said, "Do you want to buy a block of land?" I said, "What?" "I want to buy a block of land." "Oh," I said, "where is it built?" And he told me it was over here on Como. Well, I said, "What do you want for it?" And he told me, "All right. Where do you want the money?" he said. So I got through the pay book and said, "Here, honey. I've got a block of land that paid for this one."
Before you were to come home, what were your duties? What did you have to do?
Before I came home? Those members of the unit that had to stay there, they were given a task of, as the brigade, to go over and straighten out the celibies and hand them over to the Dutch. And in those days, all those places up there were run by, or so they reckoned, owned and run by the Dutch, you see. Well, the buggers were everywhere, and they were calling themselves colonels and things like that, you see. And that stuff stowed away there and that. And there were some Japs still around the place we had to collect. Oh, no, I collected some from somewhere. And we passed them over to a central place brigade. They passed them on, of course. And there was a lot of stuff there, property and that, stores and things like that. Now, you can see those two big carvings there. Well, now, I was called away from the area that I was responsible for at the time, and that was down at Bonsain, in the bottom of the Celebes. And the fellow that took over from me, it was only for a week, I was called back to Macassar. and he took over from me, and he finished off a bit of work that I'd done. That was cleaning up some stores and handing them back to the Dutch. And so the Dutch gave him a couple of those carvings, but nowhere near that type, or they were practically the same, but nowhere near as big, nor such a good job. So when I came back from Macassar down to the unit, and this fella told me about him, I said, they should be mine. Oh, no, you don't get them. Well, I said, we'll have them. No, it's a pair. So, I said, you go to the Dutchman and get another. Oh, no, I think it was still the Celebes still were running the store. Get a pair for me from there. All right. So they came back with those. a few other things up there. Oh, the stuff that they had there. Local people had stowed away and hidden in stores to try and beat the Japs, and then the Japs had got onto them, and they hadn't used them, they had them still stowed away. And while I was away for a week up to this place, they got into the stores, their own troops, and they're selling them. And when I came back down here, I went bloody crook. I said, you better go along and get me a pair of them. And they did. And that's what happened. Oh, that's something else too. And I bought other carvings there. But it was quite a job cleaning up. But I was down there at Bontane, that was down the bottom. And then I was shifted from there. They're having a bit of strife. The 14th, 2nd 14th were up the top end, and their company was shifted out of there, and I was sent up there with the company. And I had to, I was there for quite some weeks, cleaning the place up, and I collected some Japs up there, and we sent them down to deportations.
How did they feel about the surrender, do you think?
Who, the Japs?
The ones that you came across.
Well, I think they were relieved. Quite pleased. I think they hadn't had much, they had no hostilities there in the facilities, and they'd been living well. Oh, they're great. Now, come to think of it, they had great stacks of stuff there. That, rice and sugar and stuff like that. And they were just hanging on to it. So, of course, we took it over and distributed it to the local population. Of course, half of them were starved. Well, not starved, but not doing too well. And, we got on all right there.
How long were you in there for? Roughly.
I was up there for, I think it's about the end of January. I was there, and a message came through Required to go on you're required to go on an intelligence course. We want you to go up to so and so. The thing was all wrong. At any rate, I had visions of having to go back up the Fly River. Instead of that, I got round to brigade, and what I had to do was pack up and come down to Australia and do an intelligence course. And I said, to the brigade major, what the bloody hell do they want this for? Me with an intelligence? I said, I don't want to go to intelligence. Well, you've got to go. You've been nominated from land headquarters around Brisbane, and you've got to go there for this to do an intelligence course. You've been nominated. And I said, I don't want to go down there. Yes, I said, I'm not interested in the intelligence. I said, well, you're going. So, of course, I finished up on the plane and I flew back to Cairns. No, they knew nothing about it. So they said, well, we better send you down lower. So the next stage was somewhere down a bit lower, I forget now. No, we know nothing about it. And I finished up and went through Brisbane. No, they didn't know a bloody thing about it. And I finished up in Melbourne. And they said, what? And you were up there? I said, yes. They couldn't make it out. Well, we'll make inquiries. And they said, oh, you've been nominated from a fellow in land headquarters. I said, who was it? Oh, they said, Captain McKenzie. Well, I knew him. I said, oh, Bruce R.B. McKenzie. Yeah. And, I said, where's the course? Oh, we'll make inquiries. This is Plymouth headquarters, Victorian headquarters. So the course was up at, about 70 miles above Melbourne there. Puckapunyal. We have a Puckapunyal, you see. So, finished up. And I went to Puckapunyal for, I think it was about 5 months. And I was going crook because I want to go over and see my family. Hey? Oh no, you've got to stay here. Well, I did it, and I qualified, but only just. And they asked me what I wanted to do. Well, I said, I don't want to go to intelligence. And so they looked at my papers. Oh, well, we know. Go to, I forget the number of, number 9, I think it was. Section in Ordnance, stores and accommodation stores and things like that for the design and a distribution of them. So I finished up there. And now.
How long was it before you actually got back to see your family?
Now, wait a minute, it was about, must have been July.
46.
Yeah. The daughter, by then, I hadn't seen her. She was 17 months old. Yeah, and then I was back here I came from there. Oh, I did out to hell.
What was it like to return to your family after having been away for so long?
Oh, quite good. Oh, of course, I'd been married, you see. You know, we hadn't been together. Well, at least I'd known the wife for years. But
coming back to civilian life, what was the thing that you wanted to do most after the end of the war?
Well, it wasn't civilian life. I went back to army life still.
Well, coming back to civilian situation where you're with friends and family.
Well, it was just natural, and I still had to carry on. Although I had a lot of leave to take, because my leave, which I would have got had I stayed in the regular army, I got a surprise was added to me. And I think I had 11 months leave or something like that. And
so what did you do on that leave?
Well, the old man was in business. And he had a factory. So I went and filled in there my time there doing jobs for myself.
This was whereabouts?
In 179 Car Street, Leederville. And I've still got stuff now. I built myself a couple of lathes, wood turning lathe, the metal turning lathe.
What was life like back in Australia at the end of the war, 1946? What was it like? Had the war affected Perth very much?
Oh. It's hard to say, because it was so much, it had advanced so much.
In what way?
Oh, in the general attitude and the city itself, the way it had developed.
The people, were they aware of what had actually taken place outside of Australia, do you think, in relation to the fighting that had gone on?
Oh, yes, yeah. Of course, if anything happened to a member, they got a notice, you know, direct. My parents got a few of them. One was, I'm missing for 5 days up in New Guinea. And I was reported missing, you see. And then the next thing I got back to the unit with my mate, or sergeant major, and instead of them telling home, they didn't, or at least they couldn't. And then we went into action, Brigade Hill, when we had to retreat, Brigade Hill, and I got knocked. And then, of course, I was reported as being wounded, you see. So. And that was.
Did people really understand or care what soldiers like yourself had been through in the general public?
Well, I never got mixed with the general public. What I mean, I wasn't rushing around the countryside and talking to everybody, you know. I had my.
The private friends,
mostly connected with the army or something like that, you see. And they knew, well, they're pleased to see me and things like that. No problem otherwise. This business of, you know, of course it was, I suppose, the odd person that it came back as a bloody bully or something like that, which that did happen.
Did you know of anyone that really suffered from their experience during the war?
That was hurt in the war.
Well, suffered psychologically or never quite fit back into society properly.
No, I don't think so. Well, anyway, they were